My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. To Berlin, Judy Dempsey of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. She's the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe. We begin with a note on the Turkish population, Turkish origin population in Germany. I read the numbers over the years. The largest population of Turkish origin peoples outside of Turkey. Now Reuters reporting, gathering supplies and doing what they can for the early days of the recovery from two massive earthquakes stretching from Turkey into Syria. The damage from the early photographs is massive. Judy, a very good day to you. Your Turkish community is rallying, according to the Reuters news. What does this look like on your news? Is there attention from the Bundestag? Has the chancellor made a statement yet about the catastrophe and the need? Good day to you.
Good day, John. Thank you very much as ever for having me on your show. Indeed, the German response has been overwhelming, sympathetic, supportive. The Chancellery, the Foreign Minister, and the other ministries as well. But interestingly, I was out doing some chores today, and I was getting my hair trimmed, if you really want to know. By a young lady. And I said, we have different accents. And I said, well, we have sort of mixed accents. I said, where are you from? And she said, I'm from Turkey. I said, my condolences for this terrible, terrible catastrophe. She says, it's terrible. And we're rallying as much help as we can and money and supplies. And I mean, I'm a German. I've got German citizenship, but these are also my people. But in any case, they are people, they're humans. And she said, the worst thing is that it happened at 4 a.m. when everybody was asleep and everything just shattered down on them.
Yes, what we're also getting is mixed reports from Syria. Communications are down, Judy, as we can expect. And Aleppo was hard hit as well. People were buried in their buildings, as you say, while they were sleeping. There's also the troubles with Syria's central government objecting to or not making transparent what needs to be done. And Russia's still on the scene in Syria. So it's early days. I don't want to make any definitive comments here. I do say that Germany has enough on its hands and now it has a recovery from an earthquake that could take time. I note President Erdogan facing a re-election campaign in May has declared a state of emergency in the southern part of his country for 3 months, which extends into the period right before the vote. Watching that story, we move to Germany with another overwhelming challenge, which is Ukraine conflict. The chancellor, the Seidenwende speech of February, has now been qualified and compromised and also very carefully delineated by the chancellor. There will be weapon systems from the German arsenal flowing to Ukraine. Not only the Leopard 2 tank, which is the main battle tank, and numbers are not impressive about what's available and when, but now we read the Leopard 1 tank, which is an older version, in storage. We're also reading about a new weapon system called the remote-controlled howitzer, RCH-155, that Germany means to transfer into Ukraine. Has something changed for the German public since the reluctance of the chancellor and members of his party to participate in the war? Was there a, what we call in America, come to Jesus moment, or has this been a gradual evolution and is still evolving?
I don't think it was a come to Jesus moment. It was a come America moment, because Scholz said he would never deliver these kind of weapon systems until the United States delivered the Abrams tanks. This is the first thing. Secondly, I think this blip in the coalition, this huge internal fighting at the moment, has weakened because Scholz has survived, because America obliged and did Scholz a favor by reciprocating, so to speak. The point about this delivery of the weapon systems, and by the way, it's going to take so slow. I mean, they could speed them up because there's a new offensive, if we believe the Ukrainian Defense Ministry and intelligence sources, that the Russians are just going to hammer parts of eastern Ukraine over the coming days and weeks. Scholz seems to have weathered this storm. What he feared most was that if he went it alone, that the public, especially the East Germans and the pacifist wing of the Greens, but especially his own Social Democratic Party, would actually weaken his authority, would polarise the country, and would actually label Scholz as a kind of former Social Democrat Chancellor Helmut Schmidt, who went along with the Americans in deploying the Pershing missiles to counter the SS-20 missiles which the Soviet Union had deployed in East Germany. This was a real crisis in the Cold War period. And Scholz opposed that at the time. And Helmut Schmidt was opposed by the public at the time. Huge demonstrations. Scholz did not want to go down this path. He wanted cover from the United States, and he got it. This crisis for the moment is over.
The trip by the chancellor to South America, I've noted this in reporting about Latin American affairs. The chancellor sought what you'd have to say is sympathetic actions by Ferdinand in Buenos Aires, of course, Lula da Silva in Brasilia, and I believe Gaborich in Santiago as well, and did not receive it. Was that an item that was reported in Germany, that the Latin American countries turned their backs on the appeal by the chancellor?
They didn't quite turn their backs vis-a-vis Chancellor Scholz, who wanted a little bit more support from Latin America when it came to Ukraine and speaking out against Russia. In some ways, this is the chancellery's fault. The successive chancelleries, even under Angela Merkel, didn't actually focus enough on Latin America. They gave the ground over to China particularly and to Russia. And so Latin America, desperate need of infrastructure investment and soft loans, no conditionality, they're not going to burn the boats when it comes to what China is doing there, and neither is Russia. So Scholz went there, frankly, facing not quite opposition, but facing tough words that we're not going to just go inside with the West when it comes to Ukraine. There's one other issue that Germany is finally discovering. It's growing dependence on China for raw materials, especially the rare earth materials for special lithium batteries and others. Guess what? A lot of this is in some countries in Latin America, particularly Chile. So there's a big push, especially by the Economics and Climate Ministry here in Germany, which is under the Greens, to actually focus more and more on Latin America, engage them, invest, have closer bilateral ties and economic ties. That really is the subset of this visit.
Coming back to Germany and the weathering of the shortage of supplies, energy supplies at the beginning of the winter, the report from this distance is that Europe is still continuing to enjoy a mild winter compared to what it could have been. And the natural gas prices, the petrol prices, refined products, diesel and electricity have not bankrupted the least among you and have not in any way shut down your industry. Is all that correct? Because I'm very far away.
Europe has been very lucky, A, because of the weather, B, because of the leadership, especially in Germany, perhaps in the Netherlands, lagging a little in France because they didn't really keep an eye on the decay or the degradation of the nuclear industry, which they are totally reliant on for energy. But here in Germany, Robert Habeck, the economy ministry, moved heaven and hell to diversify, to speed up permissions, to create liquefied natural gas terminals. And this is quite astonishing. The reserves are now full. Storage facilities are full. prices are going down very, very slowly. There's a hiccup on the way, the EU decision to impose an embargo on shipments of Russian oil and diesel. We'll see how that factors into it. But at the moment, diversification has paid off, and actually the Russian invasion of Ukraine has been probably, dare I say, is one of the best things for German energy, let's leave industry for the moment, that it was forced to diversify and stop relying on Russian energy.
Final concern on Germany, which is the engine, the banker, the manufacturing hub of the EU. In the United States, the polling is showing that the support for Ukraine war is right now running into, what you say, obstacles. Nearly as many people oppose the aid as support it, and the public in general is noncommittal. Is that true in Germany as well? As the war lengthens, the fever is dimming.
I'm not so sure that the fever is dimming. There's certainly an unspoken, tacit wish that this war could somehow end. But you must realize that this is Europe. This war is being fought in Europe, and Russia is essentially attacking Europe, Ukraine. And there's an enormous number of German non-governmental organizations, charity organizations, hospitals, doctors, nurses, drivers, so many throughout Ukraine helping. So the attention is still there, and it isn't waning. What is interestingly waning for the leading conservative, but the leading serious newspaper here, the Frankfurt Allgemeine Zeitung, actually, it's really gone off the headlines. Naturally, it's Syria and Turkey, but it's other issues as well. Tiny piece on Zelensky, perhaps visiting the European Union. But nevertheless, the focus is still on Ukraine, and the public for the moment, given the regions, it's supportive of Ukraine's fight.
We turn to the Middle East. Judy's asked of her colleagues at the Carnegie Endowment and other distinguished publications and institutes that who all communicate together. Ask this question when we come back. Have the Europeans any influence in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
I'll be here to hear what's on your mind.
Kids want to share what's going on in their lives with the adults around them. Parents, grandparents, teachers, coaches, and more. They want to know you're listening, and they want to listen to you. They want your input and guidance, early and often, on all kinds of topics. When it comes to a serious subject like underage drinking, they want to know your expectations, as well as how and why, as a young person, they should avoid alcohol. How you talk about it will change as your child grows, but the important thing is to talk about it. Not just once for an hour when you think the time is right, but in 60 one-minute conversations and more that are part of your everyday talks. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
When you need me, I'll be by your side.